Welcome to Cord Killers Reckoning. The world of entertainment is turned upside down, and we're just trying to find out how to watch what we want, where we want, whenever we want. I'm Tom Merritt. Brian, where's the good stuff?
And to be honest, nowadays, I'm more into, like, where is the good stuff? I'm less interested
in where it is.
Just give me the good stuff.
Give me the stuff, man. Yeah, man. It's good to be back. It's only been a week, but I missed you.
Well, we also got a little bit quirky last week where we you were kind enough to record something a day early because I had a
We did do a Sunday thing. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because you needed to go teach people the way.
Tom, do you know that people will pay you money, like maybe as much as your full appearance fee, and you don't even have to do magic?
Yeah.
You could just talk?
That's what Jesus did.
Okay, hold on. Let me take a note. because it was awesome. It was really, really awesome.
That's cool. And no, all kidding aside, that's great.
In the after talk, I'll give more details, but it's very intimidating to pretend to be an expert in anything. As anybody who has watched this show for 15 years knows, but it meant a lot to me. Thank you very, very much for that.
That's awesome. All right, folks, let's begin with a supply run.
Future events such as these will affect you in the future.
So there's a pretty interesting article up on The Verge called Streaming Fatigue is Making DVDs Look Like the Better Option. This is by a writer named Emma Roth. There's also a companion piece called The Case for 4K Blu-ray in a World of Streaming. This is from venerable writer from The Verge, John Porter. They're both sort of indicative, and I know they're both coming from The Verge, so they're probably planned together, but they're both sort of indicative of a leaning back towards, well, maybe we should be buying DVDs. Maybe physical media is better. Here's from Emma Roth's article here. She says, the variety in Walmart's DVD bin is seemingly endless, and for a price of about $5 per disc, you can hang on to it forever. You can't really go wrong. There's just something far simpler about sifting through a mountain of DVDs that I can pick up and hold in my hands, as opposed to flipping through the thousands of movies across the several different streaming services I've subscribed to. Plus, unlike streaming, the cost of DVDs is only going down. I also don't have to worry about triggering auto-playing trailers when I just want to read the synopsis on the back of the case. And I'm certainly not stuck staring at a screen for hours as I exhaust myself with too many choices.
I'm legitimately, and I'm not doing a bit here, Tom, I'm legitimately confused in my heart about how I feel about this. Because on the one hand, there's part of me that experiences great joy when I keep on buying the same thing that I love again and again and again. And there's part of me that loved, past tense, the experience of re-experiencing a DVD but this time I'm going to listen to Brad Pitt and David Fincher talk about why they did what they did during Fight Club or whatever. But before we dive into this, do you have an inherent position? Because I don't think I do.
I do have a reverence for physical media. I think it has a place. I think there is something about physical media, especially in a properly constructed collectible box, that is a product of its own, separate from I want to watch the thing. I think there's something about us that likes to have stuff. And if you love a franchise, having the box with the photo book and the director's commentary and the discs and the maybe a figurine or a special collectible of the Batmobile or whatever, right? Like, there's something cool about that. That's not what Emma Roth is talking about here, though. I think this is a psychological backlash. It is, on the face of it, not rational to pay $5 per movie and say that's better than paying even $15 a month for unlimited movies, where you could watch a movie a night. You won't watch a movie a night, but paying $5 for a movie means you've paid $5. Like, people, you could go pay less than that for some movies digitally. It's the psychology of, I'm just tired of how these streaming services work. And if you focus in on the section that I chose to read from her story, I think there is something to limiting your choice. I think the fact that you have an infinite scroll on all of these services is what causes the exhaustion with them. I think these services would be well served to give you a limited view sometimes and say, you could dig in here if you want to find the whole catalog, but let's just give you a DVD bins worth of stuff to choose from and not give you the infinite scroll, because it is exhausting. And we like having our choices limited because it's easier to make a decision then.
I 100% agree in the idea of unlimited scroll being a big, big problem. However, it is also, like a warm hug from a straitjacket. It's so sweet to know you only have so many choices, right? And it's a Sunday afternoon, you have 4 hours, and you look at your daughter and you're like, well, what are we going to watch? And then you look at what you have. Now, in my case, I do the dumb thing of like, you should watch this Paul Verhoeven movie. Have I bought it yet? Nope. I probably should have before. Mm. And then I buy Starship Troopers, which we'll talk about later. But
yeah, yeah.
In the articles, they explain the difference between the vinyl phenomenon. Now vinyl is a unique story because, as our fine fellows over at Radiolab put it, sound is touch at a distance. Mm. Like, vocal cords vibrate, the air changes, it gets moved onto a piece of, you know, petroleum substrate, and then you hold it, and then it becomes the same sound that physically titillates your cilia, and then you experience it. In a world of digital, that's not the same story we're playing, right? We're not buying into that poetry. We just, for some reason, like the limited options that we have? Question mark?
Well, I think in the world of digital, it's the endless options that are what we have. And what we like is the ability to do anything. So it takes some of the romance out of it. Like that sound as touch as a distance is a quote I love. And it is possible with digital media. You can have warm sounds, and you're still having sound when you're doing digital media, right? But the romance of, you know, taking a record out of the sleeve, or even taking a Blu-ray out of the case, you know, and touching it and seeing the pictures goes away, and it becomes more immediate. It becomes more utilitarian. Like, I just want to watch this thing. Where is it? Give it to me. Great. Press play. Okay, I'm watching it.
So let me tell you a story that I don't think I'm talking out of school, but we're now, 4 or 5 years into having HQ here. Mm-hmm. And there's, we made friends with our neighbors. And I went and did poker night. And my neighbor, who runs a business, I won't say what, but he built a tower. And as you know, Tom, on my bucket list has been to build a tower, right?
You're a Dark Tower fan through and through. Yeah.
Yes. But he brought up, he's like, yeah, no, I needed to store all of my VHS tapes. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And he's like, oh yeah, no. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but all of the Blockbusters have gone out of business. And so I bought all of them. And I was like, you are the one who bought all of the VHS tapes, and he completes my sentence by saying, built a four-story tower to house them. House them.
And that's amazing.
And I was so, and I was like, so exactly why? And before I could finish the sentence, He said, I have Turkish Superman. And I knew instantly what he was talking about. Yep. He started to explain it. And I'm like, keep going.
Yeah. Fast forward.
I have the Barbie documentary of, oh goodness, who is the singer that did Why Do Birds Suddenly Appear?
Carpenters.
Yes. Karen Carpenter, the Karen Carpenter story mm-hmm. as performed with Barbies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I read about that when I was 19 years old. And then he goes on to detail. And it was very clear that to him, there was something special and precious and wonderful about having the actual.
Yeah, thing, right.
Not clicking a button yeah. on the YouTubes and
not
so
finding
on.
It on Daily Motion, not doing a torrent of it, which you absolutely could do. You can do both of those.
I would never, ever want to rob somebody of the joy that I saw in that in my neighbor when he described all of that. So I do understand, no matter how silly the medium is, like I'm certain vinyl's a special case because vinyl's has a special history. But whether it's 8-tracks, cassettes,
real
VHS,
or real.
DVD and you know Blu-ray, and by the way of course what we're doing is we're teeing up everybody to write us at cordkillers@gmail.com, but like is there any unprecious format to you?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. Just to give John Porter his due, his article talks about, extols the value of Blu-ray and the fact that it's uncompressed. That you get a more dynamic range than any streaming service. You also have better audio. You might not notice the difference if you're using built-in speakers, but if you have a decent sound system, you might notice better audio out of Blu-ray. So that's a different kind of precious than what you're talking about, right? That's a current kind of precious. Like, I want the highest quality Blu-ray. What Emma was talking about in her article is the preciousness of limitation of choice and sort of physicality. And then I think you introduced another aspect of it is sort of the romance, and to borrow a phrase from Philip K. Dick's The Man in the High Castle, the historicity of a format, right? Like, when you play an 8-track now, you're not just saying, oh, I like the quirks of this format. You're saying I want the nostalgia of it. I want the historicity of this 8-track because it's not a modern, nobody makes 8-tracks anymore, right? So if you're playing an 8-track, chances are it's from that time period. So when you play REO Speedwagon's High Infidelity on 8-track, you're rejuvenating 1981 again. So yeah, I think there's something precious about every format after a certain amount of time, right? Where it's like, I'm reliving this period of history. I'm recreating history by playing it.
Well, I think there's also a little bit of like, I would never choose, all things being equal, to be restricted in what I could experience. However, I know that I found myself in a 2-day retreat in a room surrounded by books. And I've never, ever picked up the book Shogun before, but I did that night, and something special happened. I don't know how much of it is like, no, it's superior and better to have less choice versus it is a wonderful experience find yourself with very few choices.
Yeah.
Would be the way that I would put it.
I think where I'm ending up here is I think Emma Roth is on to something, but it's not an alternative to streaming. It's, I think, discovering or rediscovering or unveiling the pleasures of taking a walk versus driving, right? Watching, going to the DVD bin and choosing a DVD is the equivalent of saying, you know what, I'm just going to walk there because I enjoy the process of walking and seeing the neighborhood around me as I slowly get there versus driving. On the one hand, I would never say to somebody who wants to take a walk instead of drive, well, you should just drive and drive slowly and look around. You'd recreate the experience of walking in a car. That would be ridiculous. And likewise, if you need to get somewhere fast and efficient, you know, don't walk. That's probably, that may not be the most efficient way. So I think these are just two different ways of consuming media. There's a serendipity and a physicality of physical media that we shouldn't lose. And is a different experience and is not an alternative to streaming. It's a different thing than streaming. And I think streaming is still trying to find its final form. I think the endless scroll does have a problem, but I don't think the solution is to emulate physical media or fake up physical media in digital. I think it needs to figure out its own interface better.
You and I are both aware in marketing, even in digital media, of artificial scarcity. But I'll tell you this much, like, so you have a place where you know the rules are lay down all your arms. You're not going to use cell phones and so on. You're at your in-laws' house for Thanksgiving. So your eyes scan and then your dad says, oh my God, have Lonesome Dove. And your kid is like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And your dad is like, this is going to be so special. And it is special and precious because it's the only game in town. And your dad just told you it's the best game in town. And so you sit down and you watch all of Lonesome Dove over Thanksgiving. Like, it's hard. I've had so many wonderful moments like that. It's really hard for me to be against it in any
way. Yeah. And I don't think you have to choose a side here. And to be fair, I don't think that's what Emma Roth is trying to say either, but I think they're just different situations. And the idea that like streaming will kill physical media, I mean, that's as ridiculous as, CDs will kill vinyl. They didn't, because vinyl had an appeal to it. CDs killed 8-tracks. Sure, they haven't even killed cassettes, which are having a little bit of a comeback too. So yeah, I don't know if this means DVDs stick around or if Blu-rays become, you know, the physical format of the future, but I think there is some physical format. Maybe it's USB, you know, maybe the thing is to like put an uncompressed file on a USB stick so that you can stick it in whatever, you know, you don't have to have a physical player. Maybe there's something to having a physical player in a tray that you can put it in. I don't know, but I think there is an attraction to physical media that is separate from streaming.
And I think on top of that if it's media that you are reconsuming, there are artifacts of how you consume that media.
Oh, sure. Yeah, for sure.
That become fetishized in your heart. You know, like, for example, like when it comes to high quality cinema, you know, filthy film, you know, that has hairs dancing around on it or what, or maybe, forgive me, but like, you know, you experience pornography and there are artifacts based on whether it was VHS or Betamax. You understand what I'm talking about. But it's like there are literal subcultures of pornography that are based on clearly indicating.
I think there's probably more widely accessible examples, but I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yes. No, I too have never seen pornography, Tom.
I'm just saying the audience is probably less is going to start thinking about other things when you bring up that example than that get in the way of understanding your message.
But what I mean is that there are times we see incredible stories that have a powerful impact on us, and the artifacts surrounding that tend to become part of the story for us.
Absolutely.
We are excited about the physical media that goes with it.
Yeah. On the other end of this, just to bring us back around, I do think streaming needs to figure out some kind of combat for selection fatigue. Maybe it's just, you know how you have the carousel that gives you a few things at the top that they want to promote? Maybe you just need that. Or maybe you need that plus a row of we think you'd like that's really good now that we have, you know, machine learning and large language models that are better at this stuff. Use those and say, you know what? Here are six titles we're pretty sure you're going to like today. And then there should always be a way, like, want to find more? Click here and you can go delve into the whole library. And I think the interface for walking through the library could be better so that it feels more like I'm strolling through and can have that serendipity. And there should always be search if you know exactly what you're looking for that you can get right to it. But this idea, I mean, I think the Netflix interface is the worst ever. And that's why people complain about like scrolling through Netflix for hours without deciding, is because it just never ends. It's got an endless number of categories. Each category seems to have an endless number of selections. And so there's always one more to look at. You can never get to the end of the things you're considering. And I think they need to change that.
I wonder if there's a place for, and this is rampant Brian speculation mode, I wonder if there's a place for "You Are Here. These are the six movies available. Would you like to pick one or go left by whatever definition?"
Yeah.
"Or go right by whatever definition."
Like you're going down the aisles, essentially, yeah, of a video exactly. store. Yeah,
exactly. Like, and then it's like, now you only have six things to look at.
Yeah.
Would you like to just pick one or
just keep left browsing
or right?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
No, I like that. It's the same sort of thing where it's like you get to make a decision without the endless scroll. Right.
I guess technically you're making endless decisions, but it doesn't feel that way.
Right. And you might actually make a decision on one of those sets of six and go, "Ah, yeah, actually that's what I want to watch." And then you're good. And you don't feel like, "Oh, but it's FOMO, right? Oh, I'm missing out. I can see there's dozens more." No, if it's just the six, you're like, "Yeah, there might be something around the corner, but you know what? I think this is good. I think I'm going to go with that."
Well, this is the game I've enjoyed very, very much being a parent, and maybe this makes me a bad person, but like it is clear at the age of 16 that Josephine Brushwood is ready for Paul Verhoeven movies. Mm. And so that has been the game. And I have offered her, "These are the six Paul Verhoeven."
Right. Movies. You're doing that. You're the selection curator.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then we started Total Recall, and then she was like, "I am certain I have seen this. All of this is familiar." And I was like, "Well, guess who's about to watch Starship Troopers?"
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's about G James B is like Dewey Decimal for movies. It's not about that. There's search is great. Like if you know what you're looking for, you can find things. It's not about organizing it. It's about the psychology of feeling like there's too many things in front of you that I think needs to be fixed. Hey, breaking news, Brian. I just got a message from the California Secretary of State.
Oh my God. I you got the same text I did?
No, I hope not, because mine says my ballot for the presidential primary was received and counted. And if you got that exact same message, it would mean I voted twice. Also, you're in Texas, not California.
I was about to say. So what does that mean, Tom?
It means that I have exercised my right as a citizen to vote on my local officials. And in celebration of democracy, I think I deserve money.
Yes. I personally believe that service means citizenship. You did what it took to be a citizen, and mm-hmm. you proved what it took, that you've earned your vote. You put the body politic above your rights as an individual civilian. Sorry, I'm trying to remember all of the movie, Starship. Hey, what say everybody goes to patreon.com/cordkillers.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. You guys keep us loud, live, and independent. You get early access. Ooh, now, most importantly, you are given money to Amos. Amos, jump in to Amos. Where's Amos?
He's busy.
Is he taking notes and making sure everything gets posted on time? Wait. Oh, there he is. Say hello, Amos.
Hello. Yes. That's exactly what I'm doing, is taking notes to make sure everything is posted on time.
All right. Well, was that worth a dollar? Would you like to know more? Head on over to patreon.com/cordkillers.
Yeah.
Keep us alive and independent.
Indeed. And support democracy. Time for the search party.
Oh, yeah.
Apple has ordered 10 episodes of a Neuromancer TV series. It will come from Graham Roland. You might know him from the AMC series Dark Winds, or possibly Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan on Amazon Prime Video. What do you think, Brian? We're going to get William Gibson's Neuromancer turned into television. Peripheral did great on Amazon. Apple does pretty good with shows. William Gibson is a genius. Neuromancer is old.
I think it'll be great.
Yeah, it can be. It should be. Could be.
Let me float these ideas, and you could tell me which ones you think hold up to the ages. Neuromancer, definitely prescient, right? Saw the future before it existed. So did Blade Runner.
May have created the future in many ways, right? Just by imagining it. Yeah, absolutely.
Correct.
Yeah.
Also, Blade Runner, 100%, I think we agree, survives 40 years later, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's so good that my kids were like, why have you never shown me this movie before, Dad?
That's amazing.
And they're angry about it, right? Question, and this is me very gently trying to push back, because
Brian,
in general, I'm bullish on this. Will it age poorly, or having already been done? Like, how much of Neuromancer essentially predicted things and now they're done? Like, there's a reason we've not seen a Snow Crash TV show or movie. And it's because Snow Crash accurately predicted what happened 10 years later. Now, meanwhile, I think there are a lot of other Neal Stephenson structures that I think could become movies and TV shows. Where would you place Neuromancer on this spectrum?
As Jodie Foster's character on True Detective Season 4 says, I think that's the wrong question. The question isn't, can. The question is how, or maybe it's a little bit can, but to me, the question should be, can you make Neuromancer relevant today? So can you look at that story and say, well, if we told that story faithfully to the book, it would be dated, right? Can you adapt it, not just to television, but to the modern storyteller, so that you are showing them why it was prescient? And that's the trick. I didn't watch Dark Winds or Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan, but from what I know about them, Dark Winds is probably the most similar, because it's close to, the source material is close to having been published at the same time, but it's not similar in that it wasn't prescient about the future. And I think that is a unique challenge to Snow Crash, like you say, which nobody has wanted to take on that challenge, and Neuromancer. I think it's a tall order. I'm not saying that Graham Roland isn't up to it, but it's a tall order.
So I like the fact that you and I seem to both put both Neuromancer and Snow Crash in essentially the same bucket. Let me pitch you the following. What if you faithfully, and for example, we've spoken about the fact that the Fantastic Four cast finally revealed that it was going to be a period piece that takes place in the 1960s, but would be in the MCU. What if it was a in the style of the 1980s or early 1990s when those two books were written? What if it like had the artifacts, like we just talked about the VHS artifacts,
yeah, I'm gonna pick it up what you're throwing down.
Yeah, you know, like what
the
if
kind of neon like, neon fonts and stuff? Yeah, yeah.
Like what? Not for comedic effect, the way mm-hmm. like what was it? Kung Fu Warrior, whatever that one was. Kung Fury. Not for comedic effect, but like sincerely, like this is as sincerely as, let's say, Max Headroom would portray it. And
what was the Apple TV series that was doing that? There was like, imagine if the future ended up being what the 50s thought the future would be. And there was like selling real estate on the moon and all that. And the guy from the morning show.
That's one of your favorites. That's For All Mankind, right?
No, if it was For All Mankind, I would have said For All Mankind. Although that is another a similar example to what I'm talking about.
I did like the dunk that you just pulled on me and then immediately rescinded.
However, there was one that was even more. Like, For All Mankind is an alternate history, right? For All Mankind is, what if the Soviets beat us to the moon? And then what happens after that? This show was all like, the future is exactly what the 50s predicted it would be, right? Like, you know, all chrome and style and things. Tomorrow. Thank you, Gautam. Yeah.
The Hello Tomorrow. Like selling insurance or something.
Yeah. Hello Tomorrow. It did not go well because I think that's difficult. I think that makes a great trailer. I think it's hard to sell that as a story because of the dissonance. You love the style at first, but then you're like, well, which story are you telling? Is it a futuristic story? Is it a nostalgia story? And so it's tricky. It's tricky to pull that off because you've got competing interests there.
Well, full disclosure, my brain's a little bit blended because I've been watching 1980s, you know, RoboCop.
Oh, yeah, sure.
On. So it's like it's very odd to watch 40-year-old movies and explain to your daughter, haha, this used to be crazy. Literally, yeah. What you're doing right now. Will you please put your phone down?
And watch this person pretend to use a communicating device that is essentially your phone? Yeah, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Well, let us know. Quirkkillers@gmail.com, where you fall on this as well. I'm looking forward to the attempt. So let's just leave it there. Hacks season 3 has a date. Deborah Vance returns to Vegas May 2nd. They'll do a 2-episode premiere and then 2 episodes a week until the finale, which will be a single episode, probably 2-hour episodes, I guess, on May 30th. They also released a list of the guest stars, Helen Hunt, Christina Hendricks, you might remember from Mad Men or Good Girls. Christopher Lloyd will be in there. Dan Bukatinski, if you know him from Scandal. George Wallace, Tony Goldwyn. Those are all the big names that mentioned in Variety there. But yeah, I mean, that's what Hacks does. It tells the wonderful story of Deborah Vance and her young assistant. And then it, you know, puts in some nice cameos here and there, sometimes playing themselves, sometimes not. But they're back in Vegas. Remember, if you don't remember, last season, they were on the road. They were doing a tour.
Well, and specifically, like this is an actual world, and it's unfair for me to act like I'm the only one who has privileged access to this world, but good golly, this is exactly what the world of touring looks and feels like. And I really, really hope that this does well and that we get many more seasons of Hacks.
Does this mean Deborah Vance has a residency? We shall find out. 'Cause she did, and then she got rid of it. I don't know how much this is important, but I felt like we should at least mention it. James Gunn said he's not going to call Superman Legacy Superman Legacy. He's just going to call it Superman.
Shortest answer, good. I'm tired of subtitles and everything.
Yeah.
Just call the thing what the thing is.
I feel like 2 years ago, this would have been a huge story, and we're so tired of superhero stuff now that everybody's like, yeah, okay, great, just call me when it's out.
Or yeah, the time they killed Hitler, the movie. the time the guy went across the desert, the film. I don't know.
The guy who created the atomic bomb and felt bad of it.
Yeah. Now we're playing this game. Who discovered DNA? Question.
The doll that came alive and came to Earth.
Except he was always on Earth and was always evil.
Wait, that's Planet of the Apes. Okay. The devil. The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, is already working on season 3. So I guess Amazon is fine with it. That comes as Prime Video preps a premiere later this year for season 2. So no, you didn't miss season 2, but they feel confident enough to start working on season 3.
They certainly invested enough that it would justify this decision. Tom, did you finish all of stuff so far from this franchise?
I did. I watched every episode of Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. And may I say, Eileen has never slept better.
All right. Put in that one. But I like that they're following through.
Yes.
Even though they have not fallen through on, followed through on other things like Philip K. Dick's Nazi one.
The Man in the High Castle.
Yep. No, I'm pretty sure the title, Tom, was Philip K. Dick's The Nazi One.
You know, Philip K. Dick's What If the Nazis Had Won? Yeah. Which is, you know, accurate. That's essentially what the story is. I have to admit, I liked the story of Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. I did not like all of the characterizations, although I did like some, and I thought it was way too long. It was really you should watch this in the background, I guess, because it dragged, especially in the early episodes. It got a little better towards the end, but I enjoyed the story, and I'm enough of a story nerd that I'm definitely going to watch the next season.
To be fair, cordkillers@gmail.com, we have admitted on this show before that there is certain types of programming where the purpose is to be on in the background.
Yep.
So if I don't want to put this giant $150 million investment in the same category as HGTV's We Cleaned Up a Room, but it sounds like they roughly same category for Tom.
Which region of Middle Earth will they choose? The budget? The makeover version? Yeah. And finally, Eugene Levy is the latest casting announcement for Only Murders in the Building season 4. If you're like, Eugene Levy, who's that guy? Schitt's Creek is probably what he's most famous for. So,
super, super talented. That's one of those headlines where you read it and you think to yourself, or at least I thought to myself, I mean, he wasn't already on it.
No, not yet. Seems late. Yeah. All right, let's dig for buried treasure. Brian, what have you been watching?
Well, I already mentioned that with my daughter, I'm watching Starship Troopers, and boy, is it fun to see a 16-year-old figure out that a movie is about Nazis and the humans are the bad guys.
But not The Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. But a couple days ago, we went and saw Dune 2. And I want to speak specifically about the fact that of all the places to see it, I'm very, very thankful that Justin invited me to go see it at the Alamo Draft House on Lamar, because they had, I don't know, some kind of like crazy curry cinnamon flavored popcorn.
Of course, whatever. As they should.
And at first I was like, what is this? No. And I was like, I think I kind of want some of that. And then the movie starts and they're all like, yeah, there's spice in it. And it's like, I have heard before seeing part 2 that the best way to experience it is in 3D with a Apple VR something or other. But I defy anybody to impress me more than being in a room full of other people where I'm just smelling what my brain tells me must be the spice, eating popcorn with the spice, watching hallucinogenic images caused by the spice. It was awesome. It was awesome beyond words. A little bit weird. All that jihad imagery. Outside of that, totally awesome. The spice.
Yeah. Well, the jihad imagery comes straight from the source material, so that doesn't surprise me. I haven't seen it yet. I've heard it's amazing. I heard it's even better. Part one was great. Part two is even better. So I definitely want to go out and check it out. I want to follow up on a show that I mentioned a couple months ago that I was watching called Twinkling Watermelon. We finished it up, and it is definitely the kind of show that finishes stronger than it starts. If you watch it and you start to feel like, I don't know, it seems like it's dragging, maybe it's a little obvious, stick with it. The premise of the show is that there's a guy who's a CODA, child of deaf adults. He wants to be in a band, and his father forbids it. It's like, no, you're wasting your life. Don't do that. There's a little bit of magic, and he goes to sell his guitar, but he sells it to this kind of guitar shop that only comes out during the full moon, and he gets sent back in time where he becomes friends with his father in high school, and his father can hear, and his father never told him that. And so he has to figure out, like, what happened. There's the temptation to try to prevent an accident that would cause his father to lose his hearing. But also he meets his mother, who also is in the past, but she cannot hear in the past. There's a temptation to want to help her because her life is hard. And then there's some other complications along the way. And he has to figure out what he's supposed to do in order to get back to the present altogether. It's a delightful story. It's about rock and roll. It's about high school. It's about, can you change your fate? And if you want to check it out, it's on Viki. It's called Twinkling Watermelon.
Mom, you defeated me because you were so sincere in explaining what this was. I never once got the opportunity to shout, Marty, or
not. It's not you. It's your children.
Yeah. It's your children. Yes, exactly. Or play Earth Angel. Yeah. Or say Marvin.
He never has a crush on his mom in Twinkling Watermelon. So there's that difference as well. If you got something you want us to shout out on the show, email us chordkillers@gmail.com. Meanwhile, I sent out my newsletter, Free Tom newsletter, on Friday, letting folks know that I will be at Founders Day on April 8th for the eclipse, for the celebration in Austin, Texas. And Brian, they all should come too. There's not just because I'm going to be there, right?
Yeah. But before we talk about the event, can you and I just share for a moment what a great, wonderful medium email remains to this day? It's been 30 years since you and I started playing on email, but email remains a private conversation. Like, you can say, hey, I learned about this, or this seems to be the way things are going, or whatever. So before we talk about the event, I want to encourage everybody to follow freetomnewsletter.com. And if you're up for it, just sign up at gimme.scamstuff.com. We'll pretend like you will be entered into a contest, but ultimately you'll end up on my email list. But Tom, is it just me, or is that, for me, that is my favorite way to talk to people, because it's direct, earnest, and private, and I don't have to worry about it being upvoted or downvoted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And people can still comment. It's called replying to the email, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Right? And guess what? You don't need to call it a DM or nothing.
No.
It's like, there's no, yatata vaudeville show about any of it. It's so great.
Yeah, no, I love it. In fact, my email on Friday was just kind of me talking about my week, mentioning that because I had just booked all my travel, where I was going and all of that. And I got a couple of people who were like, that was a really good email, which, you know, you don't hear that about your Twitter posts.
Usually. Exactly, right? So I will, per the event, yes, we're doing an event. If you go to foundersdayeclipse.com, you can buy a ticket. But many people are still able to buy tickets to get to Austin, but all of them are surprised that there are no rental cars available.
None.
The reason that there are none is because everybody is renting cars as an insurance policy in case it's cloudy. Now, meanwhile, I'm having to play a different game. I'm having to create an event that's so great that you don't really care whether or not it's cloudy or not, which, fingers crossed, but make friends with someone who has a car if you intend to drive off and go to where the weather is clear.
Yeah, indeed. And get to Founders Day. What's the URL again? I always forget.
Foundersdayeclipse.com.
Foundersdayeclipse.
It should just forward to the scam stuff thing.
Excellent. All right, time to scan the horizon. I got to remember to start this earlier. It just sounds like I'm taking a, you know. There we go. Netflix used to let you subscribe through the Apple app, meaning it had to give Apple 30% of its fees, or 15%. It did change over the years. But in 2018, Netflix just said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. You want to subscribe to Netflix, go to Netflix.com. We're not going to take it through the app. But if you had already signed up through the app, they let you keep getting billed that way. They didn't cut you off. They're like, well, you already signed up. Well, I guess we'll just keep giving Apple the 15%. Well, Netflix is over that. Users who were being billed through Apple will be alerted that they must provide Netflix another method of payment or their subscription will be canceled. It also means they lose any lower prices they'd been grandfathered into as well in a few cases. But mostly it's go to Netflix.com and re-sign, you know, and change your billing info or you're not subscribed to Netflix anymore.
So I think we both agree that they have the right to do that.
Certainly. Yeah. As a comparison, T-Mobile recently made me change my payment method for T-Mobile. They said, we're not taking American Express anymore. So you have to change. And I had to go in and put in a different credit card. So it's in some ways no different than that.
So the game I'd like to play with you, Tom, is this is this the right time to make this play? Like, one of the recurring themes we've had on this show over the last 2 years has been Netflix increasingly pinching pennies and grabbing crumbs and all that stuff. Is this a bad look or are they just well positioned such where it's like, what are you going to do? Watch Hulu?
My analysis of this is that Netflix did the math. Probably over time, since 2018, that's 6 years ago, a number of those people switched their payment method anyway. A number of those people just dropped off and canceled, and they have a small enough percentage of people using Apple in-app billing that they look at the 15% they have to give Apple and go, okay, that many people times 15% equals this much money. Then they have a fairly good estimate of like, if we force them to change, this many people will change. This many people will take the opportunity to just drop off. This many people will drop off because they missed the email or whatever. And the number of the dollar amount they have to keep giving Apple is bigger than the number that they will lose when people drop off. And so therefore it makes sense to just say, you know what? We're not going to do it anymore. We're not going to give Apple a larger cut of our revenue than we have to.
If I had the Fight Club DVD, I would exactly play the scene where the main character says, the exact same thing about the recall of flawed vehicles, where it's like, if X is the number of flaws and Y is the number of people who get killed, and if the combination is less than the cost of a recall, we don't do one.
And in Netflix's case, I think it's worth pointing out, no one dies. So it's an easier decision to make. But yeah, I think that's what's going on there. And I doubt there's going to be that. Netflix has done things that affect more people and make them complain more. I don't think this is going to be that big of a deal. It's a bigger deal for Apple, which, you know, loses another bit of revenue there. New Tubi logo. Tubi, I feel like Tubi, if you don't know, Tubi is owned by Fox. It's free ad-supported streaming. It's very popular. In fact, it's up there above some of the paid streaming services like Paramount Plus as far as usage goes. And they rebranded. It's now a purple background, which Tubi calls Turple because it's a Tubi purple, with the brand name emblazoned in yellow, which is apparently called Hello Yellow. And I am told, well, actually, I'm not told, VP of design Simone Magurno told Variety, it represents the thrill of discovery. And they also added Sonic branding. So just like Netflix has the Tudum, Tubi now has a chorus of ethereal voices singing the name Tubi.
Talked about this, but I'm going to actually search Roku logo. I guess maybe it's not as close as I thought.
It's a darker purple and it's a white text, or sometimes it's purple text on a white background.
Yeah. It certainly is close enough for me to think that's an odd choice.
The yellow does set it off, but the purple is fairly close. It's a different purple, but it's still darkish.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. After talk, we'll get into the weeds.
why don't you want to get, this is your moment to shine. This is marketing. This is what you love.
Okay. So in general, what you want to do is you want to convey what category you're in with one color or one font style. And in general, you want to convey who you're not with the other one, right? Mm. So when I think of Roku, I think of that little tag on the side.
Yeah.
That means Roku, right? And so if I flash this just really fast, just really fast, could you have confused that for Roku?
Possibly. The yellow helps, but possibly, yeah, for sure.
Right. So if you're throwing in the yellow, like how many other competitors are you fighting off by being a different color on that is what I don't know.
Yeah. Amazon has issued an update to Fire TV streaming devices and televisions that has broken the apps that people have installed that let you bypass the home screen. So some folks have run their own third-party home screens, and those third-party home screens take advantage of the fact that there was an API that let them, for you, it looked like you were clicking on an app, but what the alternate home screen was doing was calling this API and dropping you directly into an app without having to go through the home screen. The update to Fire OS broke that, so the alternate home screens don't work. It's the age-old story, Brian. How much of this was Amazon not liking people using alternate home screens because then they can't show you paid suggestions? And how much of this was just them changing the OS and not caring about whether it broke alternate home screens?
Let me propose a scenario in which your cousin comes over and says, "Oh, what? You have a broken Fire thingy? Let me fix it. This one gets you all of my movies from my server on Plex." And then you're like, "Well, this is great." And then maybe they fix it with an aesthetic upgrade like this.
Yeah. Okay. You're saying you can fix the fix on your own. Don't even worry about it. BBC Studios has paid the equivalent of $322 million to acquire ITV's share of BritBox International. A little bit of a thorny story in some ways, because there's BritBox in the UK that works differently and has a different selection than BritBox International. BritBox International has a lot of BBC stuff, but not all of BBC stuff, and also has a lot of ITV stuff, but not all of ITV stuff. It is, however, the biggest ever single transaction for BBC's commercial wing, and it gives BBC's commercial wing full control, and therefore full revenue, of what is a niche but fairly popular streaming service.
I feel like this one's big enough we may need a follow-up on, but like ITV is not going to own, or sorry, BBC is not going to own ITV's IP.
No, definitely not. Right. This is like, I don't know, but it's just like Hulu. This is exactly what Disney just did, where they bought out Comcast.
Or Hulu with FX or whatever. It's like, we now have the rights to all of this.
Well, it was, when I say it's like, did Comcast owned part of Hulu, right? And in fact, Hulu used to be joint owned by multiple places. When Disney bought Fox, it then bought out everyone but Comcast shares. And then, as we know, this past year, it bought out Comcast share, and now it owns Hulu. BritBox was the same way. It was a joint venture. It was like Hulu for British TV, but only international. And BBC has now done what Disney did, which is like, you know, say, you know what? We're just going to take the whole thing ourselves.
Well, then let's speculate about if they paid, I don't know, $250 million, give or take, to acquire the rights to stream that content. That seems like a very strong vote of confidence for BritBox.
I mean, I think what it is the BBC is feeling pressure to make money outside of government funding. That's not it. It seems it. It is definitely receiving pressure to make money outside of government funding. And some of the restrictions on it to do so have been loosened to the point that it's able to justify, yes, we can spend $322 million or £255 million to be exact, to buy out ITV and run an international streaming business. Similar to them licensing the BBC America channel to AMC. If they had bought the BBC America channel back from AMC and run it themselves, they're just doing it with streaming.
Would I be right in interpreting this as a play to spend money now so that you could become Coca-Cola or NBC or whatever the dominant player is?
I don't think they're because that would mean they're trying to compete with Netflix, and I don't think they are. I think this is them saying, we want to keep all the money from what is a very successful niche experience. And I put BritBox alongside Crunchyroll, right? There's a dedicated fan base for British television, and that's, we want to profit from it.
So maybe the takeaway is that that's a bigger market than you and I here in America would have thought before.
I would have thought it was a decent market, but obviously BBC thinks it's a profitable market, right? Or they wouldn't do this. Now, they will have to pay ITV licensing, but they can keep ITV stuff on here, and they can try to acquire other stuff, just the way Netflix, you know, acquires Disney shows still and puts them on Netflix. So it's not like it cuts down what can be on the platform. It just means that only the BBC is making the calls, and they're going to have to negotiate with anybody that's not them.
What this really is a story about how little Brian understood the value of BritBox was.
Interestingly enough, the best stuff from British television isn't on BritBox right now. Like Doctor Who's on Disney Plus. So it's even more interesting and intriguing that it's worth that much money too. Speaking of money, Taylor Swift and Beyonce were given credit for driving almost all of the revenue growth for AMC theaters in Q4. The CEO said revenue growth attributable to our having shown these two movies in our theaters.
I don't want to talk out of school, but somebody I work with makes pretty good money by being a regular, like, on mic MC for trivia stuff at a movie theater. We've talked about the emerging space of, like, what does it mean to be a movie theater? It used to be a very simple thing. It was like, it was the one place where you could go to see this movie or what have you. But then there were events, and then there were concerts that were being presented on in movie theaters. Is there anything about this story that tickles you to speculate? He says, trying to tickle you to speculate about the future of movie theaters.
I mean, nothing different than what we've talked about before, which is, you know, they're loosening up and they're realizing that the Hollywood pictures aren't the only pictures that are going to bring them money. And so it is a little bit of Schadenfreude to watch, you know, the CEO of a theater chain that was holding the line on the 90-day window for years go like, on the other hand, maybe we should show concert footage because that seems to bring people in. It's good news. I think it's good news. It means that lesson is being learned and they're finding alternative ways to keep theaters open, because I do like a theater and I want them to continue.
Yeah. We'll talk in after talk.
Nah, stop saying that. We don't have time. We got 16 topics for after talk now.
It just means people should really go to court killers.
We won't have time. All right, I'm joking. Warner Brothers Discovery is no longer pursuing a merger with Paramount Global, which, to my way of thinking, means we have moved on to stage two of the inevitable thing that I have been pointing to all year, which is, once the Hulu ownership was figured out, once we get to May and the restrictions on what AT&T can do with its shares of Warner Brothers Discovery are done, the starter gun goes off and we're going to see who buys who. An inevitable part of that would be the smaller companies that are probably going to get acquired talking to each other to be like, should we just team up ourselves? Does that make sense? And at the very least, we can find out what each of us thinks we're worth so that when we go to the big guys, we can go, well, even Paramount was going to pay us this much. Come on. Like, well, what do you got? So, this is, to me, not like, oh, I guess Warner Brothers Discovery is no longer going to pursue a merger. It's Paramount Global and Warner Brothers Discovery are now on the chopping block. Who wants them? They're up for sale. Not officially.
Yeah. I have thoughts, but they're probably wrong, and I'm probably not supposed to say
them. No, we should do them in after talk.
Yes.
No, what are your thoughts? What are you talking about? That's why you were here.
Well, no, I mean, like, legally, I think I'm not supposed to.
Oh, I see. Yes. Never mind. We'll do them in after talk. We got a couple of really good emails. One was sent from a pixel, and the other was sent by Richard. Both of them said that Amazon raising its price, like all of their services, would have been preferable to leaving the price as it is, because everyone expected Amazon would be ad-free. And Pixel wrote, if, say, you renewed your yearly subscription in September before this was announced, I think people would have a point saying that this was a bait and switch and they should still have gotten ad free until the current yearly period is up. And Richard said, I think it's not about people expecting no ads forever, but about customers who have already paid for a year's worth of Prime, expecting shows without ads to suddenly have to pay more during their subscription period than they had already paid.
Yeah, to be honest, it is a bit curious from a customer service experience that they wouldn't just let a lot of people slide, but instead just take something away that they expected when they bought. You know, it's
well, but they actually added something. The ads.
He's trying really hard to be defensive, and then you said they added the ads, and I'm like, yeah, no, screw those guys.
Yeah. I think psychologically you guys are absolutely right that's what it feels like, is I paid for ad free and then you put ads in it. I think legally, though, when you're in a court, it will be, you know, was it promised to be ad free? Like, where did you get the idea that it was ad free? Did you just assume it was ad free? Well, then it's on you, is what the court might say.
Legally, one might say, you bought a expedited shipping program. Yeah,
especially if it's that, right?
Got the gift of content. You got used to the content arriving one way, and then now you're crying because the content arrives some other way. That's not how I feel, by the way. Yeah.
Not to mention, there were ads in Amazon Prime Video. You likely never encountered them, but if you watched a show that was on Freevee in Amazon Prime Video, it would play ads sometimes. So I'm sure Amazon's going to point to that edge case as like, but we already had ads. We just increased the number. It's not like we didn't have them before. Antoine wrote in and said he remembered some time ago we were talking about using our phones as a second screen while watching TV shows. I wanted to point out mychathouse.com, where you can chat with other folks while watching your favorite TV shows. If a TV show chat room is not available, you can create it yourself and hope other folks show up and start chatting about the show with you. So I thought that was pretty cool. Go check it out, mychathouse.com.
Oh my God. I'm literally afraid to open it live on the stream.
Yeah, maybe you should be. I have no idea. I mean, especially because if you drop an H out of my chat house, it becomes an entirely different site.
My chat house.
So just fair type enough. Carefully, fair everyone. Type fair enough. It's mychathouse.com. And finally, we've talked about calling our practice of doing first, best, worst, last in spoiler in time, first, upper, lower, last, or full, like getting the full experience. But we were like, is upper and lower the best? John wrote in and suggested that UNL in full could be ultimate and loser for the best and the worst. So first, ultimate, loser, last.
Last. Oh, look, Tom, I'm trying not to get too excited, but I think there's a full-on separate podcast here called The Full Experience.
Yes.
Where we experience it. I will, most of this will be in the after talk. Ha-ha, take that, patreon.com.
21.
Justin brought up the idea of like in between. So we do four episodes, and then we do a very special episode. Doesn't have to be from the same show.
Right.
Just
like an amuse-bouche.
Dissect some kind of very special episode, and then we get back to the full experience on the next thing.
Yeah. Check out After Talk, patreon.com/cordkillers. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We are live at twitch.tv/nightattack Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. And I reckon we'll talk to you next time.